So welcome to everybody listening now and in the future. This is a free professional talk with one of our experts, Jim File. Jim is really bringing something wonderful and new that's come from all his years, over 50 years, I think, now of practicing. And for those of you who don't know him, he started out as a professor of English literature and then as a hobby, got to know one of our most legendary people in the world, Randolph Stone, teaching polarity. So then he became someone who learned that and began to teach that, as well as the biodynamic cranial psychotherapy pre-perinatal, you know, in relationship with a lot of our pioneers, developing energetic and physical ways to heal, working with polarity and our inner sort of what I hear Jim talk about, the pulse. And he became a longtime student of Stanley Kelleman. And I'll let him explain more about Stanley Kelleman and his model of care. So please welcome Jim File.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Kate. All right. Great to have everybody here. And we have an hour. And in that hour, I'm going to try to do about 4 days of material. So it's going to be a little bit challenging. So anyway, I guess I'll have to cherry pick a little bit. There was a company, I don't know if you know it, it's called the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And they used to perform all the works of Shakespeare in a little under 2 hours. So I feel like I'm kind of more or less doing the same thing. So anyway, we'll get right into it. I'm going to talk for a little bit about the topic and then we'll do a couple of, at least a couple of short demos so you see it in action, because there's nothing like seeing it. Even it's even better if you can experience it. But I think, we can create stories out of a lecture, which may or may not be what the reality is. And so we'll do a little bit of both, right? It's a vast topic. And everybody, of course, in a way is already involved in it. Signaling is really a central, if not the full aspect of what communication is certainly a critical part of everyday communication at every level, both with the world and with others and with ourselves. So it's a topic on one level we know, and on another level, it really, you can inquire into it and deepen into it and nuance it enormously. And particularly if we're working first with ourselves and working as facilitators of some sort, the whole idea of signaling and self-signaling and the whole idea of forming and formativeness and of embodiment are critical features of working with people. So, so there are, of course, signals which are very simple, very literal, you know, stop signs, green, red lights, and all kinds of relatively simple signals. And then, of course, there are complex signals that, you know, that have, that can be somewhat ambiguous. They can be, hidden, they can be obscure, you know, treasure maps, or flirting is kind of a signal that can be kind of complex. And so, you know, we can get signals of all kinds, Dr. House, right, television series fame is he's always looking into strange signs and symptoms of his clients and his patients, right, to try to understand and get behind them. What are these things signaling? And we love crime stories and forensic stories, and all of that is about signaling in some form. So a signal, basically, to make this, to give you my definition, a simple definition, a signal, first of all, is something that calls our attention, right? If it doesn't call our attention, it's not functioning as a signal. It calls our attention and somehow emerges out of a ground, out of a matrix, or even out of a a great noise of the world. So first it calls our attention. And then additionally, of course, it has a kind of informational content. It has there's an intentionality around a signal. Yeah. And then this informational content, we can give it more meaning. We can give it a certain importance. We can add a story to it. So it's something that can be amplified and can grow, right? And then additionally, it's very often a call to action. And so it moves us to act or not act. And in complicated moments or in everyday moments. And so these are kind of some of the fundamental features of signals, right? But first, it's got to call our attention. If we don't perceive it, then of course, forget it. It's not a signal, right? Or it's not functioning as a signal. Of course, it can indicate all kinds of things to us. It can warn us. It can direct us, right? And so it can have many, many functions. And, I'm kind of dropping through a lot of topics briefly and quickly just to name them. Each one of these could be a whole, as I mentioned, a kind of a whole exploration in themselves. But of course, we all understand important signals, right? Safety signals, right? With the whole polyvagal world, we all understand that there are signals that somehow let us know that we're safe, we're home, we're somewhere where we can let down. We don't have to be vigilant, right? And danger signals and life threat signals. And of course, right now in the world, there are war signals, right? Which the people in charge are having to parse and read and give meaning to, yeah? And of course, we won't go into pandemic signals, but we are continually surrounded by all kinds of signals with greater or lesser importance and in the way that they capture our attention and hold our attention. Additionally, important signals are signals that something is ending, something small in our lives or something large, right? There are ending signals. And so it's really important to kind of, in a way, be able to sit with these signals of endings, right? They can sometimes be ambiguous also, right? Is the bull market on Wall Street ending? Or because that could change our lives. Or for those people who are invested, what do these signals mean, right? Is something ending, or is a person in our lives ending, or is a work ending, or is a chapter in our lives ending? And all of these are emitting signals, which again, they may be hard to let in because change and loss isn't so easy. So there are a whole category of signals around endings, which are often very tied into health and the organization of illness as a result, yeah. And of course, there are beginning signals of something beginning, something new, which can be very exciting or can be very, anxiety producing. So signals of endings, signals of beginnings, and then there are actual signals of a transition phase where everything is fluid and nothing is like it was, but nothing is like it's going to be. And how do we manage the signals of transition? Yeah. And so all of this is part of what we're looking at. We're looking at these important signaling processes. And often it's hard to settle into these and to appreciate them. And that's even though they're in our lives every day and all the time, I think we are constantly refining the way we hold and manage signals, yeah. And just in talking about it, maybe you can already begin to feel a little bit of an acceleration as the signals in different parts of your life kind of are more or less easy to manage and so forth, yeah. And then signals, of course, have everything to do with our perception, right? There are signals that we are just innately responsive to, right? That we have reflex reactions, survival reactions. They just happen, right? We respond to signals, instinctively. And then, of course, there are learned signals, right? Where we're trained, we're practiced, and we're studied, we're experienced, right? And so we're able to explore these kinds of signals, right? So and there's a combination. There are kind of both dispositional and learned and combined signals. And, then there are interactive, intersubjective signals between people continually, right? And feedback loops. I say something, you say, do something. Whoops, I say something to that signal. And we start getting into an ongoing loops of feedback and signaling and clarification and amplification and reactivity and entering and engagement. And of course, the people who understand this are supposedly are the great actors, in the theater and movies and film and whatever, need to understand these interactive signals in a very refined way. And of course, they're very good at nuancing them, bringing them out where people can look at them, see them, experience them. Yeah. So this is kind of a little bit the world of signals. Yeah. And so signals have also a lot to do with kind of a readiness to act in relation to them, particularly if they come from the outside, but even from the inside, right? They are built, as we said before, a little bit, they're built with a disposition towards acting, right? So you've got, for example, a symphony conductor up there. He's giving all kinds of incredible signals to the orchestra, right? Each of these signals, everything he does or she does, kind of brings something out of these musicians. They're ready to respond. They're highly trained to respond. They're really alert. They're really perceptively ready. And the action comes out of this kind of responsiveness to a very complex and refined signaling system. And so how do we respond to the complex signaling of the world and the complex signaling that we give ourselves? And there's kind of a standardized signaling that every conductor learns. And then there's the personalized signaling, which the musicians have to learn. What does this conductor do that is really a personal nuance in signaling and which they need to respond to? You can begin to see this. There's a lot going on here. We could look at athletes, for example. To look at signaling, a sprinter, for example, has to get into a position, right? Ready to sprint. Yeah. And so in a way, getting into the position of readiness to sprint, he's signaling himself or herself that I am ready, right? And then they may have to do small adjustments, signaling, I'm even more ready. And then a little bit more. And when that gunshot, kind of shoots, the readiness to act is explosive. Yeah. And so there's a combination of an external signal, but all kinds of little internal signals that tell the athlete or the musician or whoever that I am ready. Wow. To respond. I'm ready to bring my best action, my best, performance out. And so in a way, these are kind of metaphors or examples of what our daily life is, right? Our daily life is a series of signals of all kinds, which we are more or less, or yes or not, ready to respond to. And some days, you know, some things we respond to pretty in a pretty mediocre way. Some things we somehow bring our best response to. And so this dialogue of signal and preparation and readiness to act and the actual action is continually going on. And so our life is a continual learning to respond to signals ever in an ever more sophisticated, adult, effective way. Good. Now, if we were in a classroom, I'd stop for a moment and ask everybody how you're doing. But since we're not, and we don't have that much time, I'm going to keep going. I hope that you're doing okay with this. Yeah. Now, let's do just a short exercise. Some of you have done this with me before, but I'm going to ask everybody, you know, to make a fist and to hold that fist. So just make a fist. And you, not by hold it, I mean, you don't have to hold it with your other hand, but just hold it as you're making it. Okay, so everybody's done that, I assume, if you want to play the game. So you've made a fist. Okay, so what kind of fist have you made, right? Because I didn't tell you what kind of fist you've made. Each of you has made a fist, yeah? And that fist, right, exactly. Well, there you go. You see, now you're showing me the fist. You see, you've made this kind of fist, right? So it has a certain intensity, you know, and it actually probably has an inherent intention. If you start to pay attention to your own fist, is it a fist that you can hold for a few minutes, or is it so intense you're not going to be able to hold it very long, right? And you decided that. You interpreted fist, and you made a certain kind of fist. Is it a fist that's ready to fight? Is it a fist that just, you know, is kind of a fist of, I feel my own power here, right? Is it a victory fist, right? Or is it a fist that grabs onto something, right? There are so many kinds of possible fists, you know? And as we talk about it, maybe it's even opening the possibility for you to see, man, what kind of fist did I make here? Because that's a kind of self-signal. You know, the environment didn't demand a fist, but there was an opportunity and suggestion you make a fist. And that's interesting feedback. Ooh, look what kind of fist I made, you know? And maybe the way you made this fist says something to you about how you do things in general, right? If you made a really intense fist, maybe it says, boy, I do things so intensely that I quickly burn out, you know, or I quickly reach my limit. Or maybe you're so ready to build a, you know, an angry fist that maybe that predisposition is right on the surface for you. Yeah. So there's a way in which making this fist can also be a signal to the outside, but also a signal and an information to yourself about self-signaling. And then the question is, what's your response to your own fist? Do you like this fist? Ooh, I like this. Or, ooh, it's kind of tiring. Or, you know, I'm not big on fists. I like petting motions, right? So there's a whole way in which you can begin to understand your own action, your own behavior, which you may not have paid attention to before, right? You were just following an instruction and you did something. Okay, so what? But the information is there for us, yeah? And this is what we're going to build on as we get into kind of working with self-signaling, you know? So we're doing this all the time. Of course, given that we are continually acting in the world, not always making fists, but we're acting somehow, right? Life is all, and we don't probably think too much about what kind of signals we're giving ourselves in our actions. Maybe occasionally we do. Ooh, I notice I'm kind of rigid. I'm really tight, you know, or you know, maybe there are times when the signal, our body signals, are so intense or so salient that they call attention to us. What am I organizing here, right? And so this whole world of body signals, which are signals to the outside because we're responding, but they're also at the same time signals to ourselves. Yeah. And so body signals can be explored, extensively, right? But of course they start with embryology. Yeah. And we look at the embryological process, and of course it's a formative process, right? That's where signaling happens, right? Because there is so much signaling happening, chemical signals, tissue signals. There's a massive signaling engagement happening in the development of the embryo, all involuntary. No nervous system applies here because it's all cellular tissue. Something is guiding this formativeness, right? And each step of the embryological process, each shape, each step in that whole process is in a way a signal for the next step to emerge. Once this layer has been laid down, that means the next layer can come. And that means, something can form, something can compress, something can elongate. So we can begin to see how the embryological process is a continual, emission of signaling from this moment to the next moment, to the next moment, to the next shape. And so there's a massive amount of self-signaling in the service of formativeness. And what we're suggesting here is that our self-signaling as adults, as children, as adults, and so forth, is also in service of our forming, of formativeness. Sometimes we're aware of it, and a lot of times we're not. We're just doing, yeah? And so this also is part of our work and part of our method, in a sense, is looking at how every moment is a formative moment, right? And how that formative moment is guided by all types of self-signaling events. So, and then of course there are birthing signals after the embryological development signals, yeah? And then there are continual age transition signals as we grow, right? I remember when I moved into adolescence, I start to tremble when I think, right? But all of a sudden there was in school, all of a sudden everybody was looking at, well, look at all the hair that's appearing here, So hair became a signal, right? And, and all kinds of new signals showed up. And so I don't have to go mention them all, right? But all of a sudden you were aware of things that a few weeks ago you weren't aware of at all. All this signaling happening. All of a sudden I'm taller than my father. Wow. And, all of a sudden I can push him, around. All these signalings that are kind of age-based transitions, and they're formative. They're showing us this profound formative process that goes on for a lifetime. And there's a certain point where we can begin to engage that formative process voluntarily, consciously. It's not just something happening to us, but we start to go, wow, look at this, and how can I participate in this? Yeah. And of course, formativeness itself is biological. There's a whole evolutionary dimension to formativeness. It's also familial, social, because we engage social and family forms, community forms that also shape us. And then there's kind of what we might call the personal forming dimension, where we influence and make choices and make effort in order to influence our biological shaping and our social shaping. And so there's a lot of signaling going on from these different domains, and we are orienting ourselves to all these different kinds of signaling and trying to have a personal impact, a quality of agency, as it's called, or, you know, how much can I influence? You know, obviously there's a point at which I can't be 6'2", not a form that I can influence, you know, but maybe there's other parts of my form that I can have an influence on. And that's also part of this process. How can we engage biology, evolution, societal forms, and make our personal imprint on them in a way that really engages us and provides us with satisfaction and effectiveness in life? So we're getting close. We're going to do a couple short demo sessions soon. But as we're talking here, we have to, you know, to access and work with signals. First, we have to recognize the signal. If we don't recognize the signal, can't do much about it, right? And how loud do I need a signal to be? How salient do I need a signal to be before I go, signal, pay attention, right? Begin to take in the information that the signal is bringing me. How much of the information will I let in? And what meaning does this really have for me? And what are the implications for action, for response? Yeah. And so this is all quite an exploration, quite an inquiry, right? In terms of what I recognize, what I don't recognize, you know, what I allow to amplify, to clarify, to speak to me. And, you know, and there may be, you know, a lot of layering to this, sequencing to these signals, associations that kind of build up, memories that show up, and so forth. And then how do I behave as a result? Yeah. So we're getting about to that moment where we'll do a couple of short sessions. So what we're talking about here is something that we're dealing with everyday situations, everyday challenges, opportunities, traumas, crises, you know, because, you know, the signaling is happening. We're trying to take those signals in, respond to them. And how effectively are we doing in any of those situations, right? And how much is involuntary? We can't do much about how much is voluntary. And, you know, and these signals come to us in really important phases of our lives. There's all kinds of love signals, you know, about love, about relationship, right? And forms that support these, all about, you know, signals about freedom, right? How free do I need to be? Where do I need to be free? How do I need to be free? Right? How do I need to detach from a certain embeddedness in the world? Right? And how do I empower myself? What are the forms and the signals of empowerment? Yeah. And so anyway, there are a lot of conversations around signals that one can get into. And mostly these conversations are back and forth dialogues, right? And the important signals require a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of this, a bit of that. But it's a conversation based on muscular acts and attitudes, because it's all about action, and our cortical and neural connections and configurations, and how they talk to each other, right? How does our whole behavioral game talk to our neural game, our cognitive game, and what implications does that have for our metabolism and our, you know, our energy production? Okay, I could go on, but as you can see, there's a lot of material. But why don't we start with a short contained little session around how we look at signals that may not be as recognized as they normally are. So I think we have somebody here who has volunteered to be.
Yes, Christiana, would you open your microphone, then I'll pull you up to be with Jim.
Here we are.
Ah, hello, Christiana. Christiana, right?
Yes. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Good. Okay. So nobody calls you Chris then, for short.
You can call me Chris. Some people call me Chris. Some people call me Anna.
I see. Right. I figured. Okay. So let's go for Chris. Okay. So, okay, Chris. So is there something you'd like to take a look at right now in your life, in your work life, in your personal life, that just begin to kind of, you know, begin to tell me a bit of the story about it, something real, obviously, something that has your attention. Now, I'm going to ask you, I don't know if you can drop your screen a little bit more so that I can, okay, I'd like to be able to see your hands and your arms and your signaling, you know.
Is that but better?
Not, yeah, that's good. Okay, yeah, nothing, yeah, just, okay, that's good. Yeah, I think that's, now we can see you, you see? Because, right, okay, so you're doing well. Good. Okay, so why don't you tell me a little bit about what you're interested in exploring here?
I thought the fist thing was interesting. And when I did ball up the fist, I noticed that my ears got hot and my neck got a little bit warmer. And I was really enthusiastic about my fist. It was very, it was clenched. It was quite, and I held it and it felt more comfortable for me to have my hands together. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes I noticed that I have my left shoulder that kind of sits up a little bit higher when I'm engaged in conversation or just focusing. And then I have to remind myself to let my body come down and relax a little bit. But my default state is a little bit forward, my shoulder up, and more compact, like in my core.
Okay. So obviously we're talking to somebody who has some experience around tracking their own process. Okay, so we can talk about this default state of yours. So tell me more about this default state.
Well, I uh-huh. have.
Yes, good.
So there's a pain that comes in my neck that I actually had a cervical spine. I had 4 slipped discs when I was 34. And
4 slipped discs.
Yes,
in the neck.
And I had a tongue tie release just a few years ago, 3 years ago. And I could feel just like a release, like in this left side of my neck.
Okay, and what's a tongue tie release? What exactly is a tongue tie release?
Well, I work with mother babies with cranial sacral, but a tongue tie release was there as a frenulum, like a... I never breastfed very well and I get tongue tied when I speak. And I sometimes like,
okay. So let me just ask you something. Okay. So just for the crowd, right? In other words, what we're hearing from Chris is her experience in the moment is already, she's done a lot of work. And so there are, you know, interesting stories that she's already built around her actual experience, right? So we have this kind of quality of tongue-tied, right? And which is an experience, right? Do you still experience that occasionally, periodically?
Yes.
yes. Okay, good. So there's a kind of an experience, and that experience has been, of course, in the exploration of it, has been kind of contextualized into a birth, early birth story, right? Around, you know, sucking in breastfeeding and so forth, correct? And that's what you said, right?
Yes.
Good. What's happening now as I name that?
My neck is tighter. Well, I just noticed there's a little heat in my neck.
Okay. So you see, so in a way, what I'm inviting is a return to the direct experience and the signal, and letting the story that has really, you know, formed around it, kind of let it kind of go off to the side so that we can come back to the signal in a more direct and new and fresh way. So when I suggest that, what happens to you or for you?
Well, I let my shoulders relax a little bit more. I okay. noticed your pacing was, it sounded slower, and I was able to focus more inward
mm-hmm.
To sensation, and I took an exhale.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Ah, okay. And what about the tongue-tiedness?
I mean, I'm aware right now that there's a lot of eyes on me. So, I noticed that, but are you asking more about my neck and in my mouth, like what I'm noticing?
Well, just tongue-tiedness. Wow. Okay. Right there. You see, so Chris is kind of she's working to orient to, you know, to the kinds of suggestions or the questions I'm asking. Yeah. And so, right, because she's got really a very extensive and refined and practiced way of considering her moment and her situation and what's happening. And what I'm working with is kind of, in a way, I'm kind of not accepting all of those statements, because, you know, we're trying to get back to kind of direct in the moment experience of something. Yeah. And so, you know, this would be my strategy in working, would be to get to kind of less storied experience. Ah, yes. Does that make sense to you? Right.
And I just noticed that my jaw is tight in this area, like my cheeks.
Okay, so hold that, hold your hand like that. Hold your, okay. And actually just stay there for a moment. Mm-hmm. So what happens here for you as you, you know, as you sit with your hand there?
There's a bit of a pressure in the base of my skull that arises, like just at the tip of the spine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And hold your right hand there. Hold the right hand. Just how you were, right there. Okay. See. So you see, now what we have is an experience, and we have the behavior, the actions that somehow amplify and connect to that experience. This is a whole other level of signal. Whoa, you see, and it's a signal, obviously we can see it as we're observing, but it's also a signal to Chris. Ah, there you go. See, and so I'm inviting her to kind of be with this action, this gesture, which is also a signal. It has information. And what's happening as you hold this shape?
I'm sweating. I'm starting to sweat.
Ah, you're starting to sweat. And how is that for you?
Well, there was emotion. There was an emotion there.
And emotion, is there, can you be a bit more, can you say a little bit more about that emotion?
Well, it just kind of felt a little teary. Like, yeah. I just felt a little teary-eyed.
Okay. So a little teary-eyed, maybe a little bit of sadness. Is that, yeah. Right. Okay. See, so what's starting to happen now is by holding this, there's another layer of information that's coming into the moment. There you go. That's it, which is that there is an emotion is surfacing. And so the signal, which is we're calling this a signal to yourself, is starting to, yeah, open up another level of information. There you go. See, and the body starts to take that in. Interesting. See, and we can, as I sit with Chris, and maybe some of you can experience it, something is already kind of shifting.
Yeah, my psoas muscle, like my left side, I was just reminding, it kind of, I could feel that it was contracted, mm-hmm. It was shortened a little, so I'm shifting how I'm sitting, actually.
Right. Okay. So there's a little bit of a kind of a postural reorganization happening. I see. So by in a way focusing on this particular action pattern, not just, and really staying with it, what starts to happen is a new circuit is created, a motor cortical circuit, right? There you go. You see, and you can be, maybe if you have a bit of a feel sense, there is kind of a, I get a sense of a kind of a little bit of an expansive wave. Is that anything you're noticing?
Yeah. Interestingly, yes, there's that. And there's a little bit of a, like a push pull, like, I just noticed the heat. So even though it's expanding, I can feel where it's expanding from, if that makes sense.
Where is it expanding from?
My stomach area and my chest and even my neck. Like, it just feels like there's heat coming off and that the muscles are widening.
Okay, great. Okay, so heat's moving and muscles are softening and widening. There you go. See, and so Chris is starting to feel something that we would call pulsing. There's a kind of a pulsing quality. There you go. That's it. And you can maybe feel a descending wave also, no?
Yeah, it's kind of like a icy, like an ether, just a cool mm-hmm. vapor descending.
Like a vapor descending, right? Mm-hmm. See? Yeah. So interesting, right? What's emerging by paying attention to this shape, which is actually quite a signaling process, right? And you can tell it's a very experiential response, and it gives her information that maybe wasn't in the story that she started with, yeah? There you go, right. And I think people who kind of can resonate where they're kind of sense things are actually getting a bit quieter. There's kind of an interiority that's calling her in, right, inside. And you can begin to see how that right hand on the jaw is really softening. Right? Yeah, that's right.
I kind of want to... Well, there's a good energy there too. I really want to get up and do stuff. I like want to.
Right. So there's a kind of an activation of energy, right?
Oh, yeah. It's very potent.
Oh, it's an arousal. What would you like to do?
Well, I have so much to create. I was like, oh, I have this. And then I didn't even think about the story. It was just, I could feel that energy. Like from within, and it felt, or it feels like just energizing.
Yeah, great. Okay, see, so this is, somehow taking in the, as we talked about it, the signal has new information. That information organizes meaning. It connects to a deeper pulse in the body and begins to move one to action, and maybe a very different action from what one normally does. Okay, good. Okay, so I think, you know, we could go further, but I think we're going to kind of slow. That's right. Not so fast. Let it go. Go back. And then just take it down slowly. That's it. So even slower. Just notice how you go from that state. That's it. And how you come back into a more at ease state. See, so that you can bring that experience into the, there you go. What do you notice here?
My central channel, but on the way down coming, I noticed that I was like, my pelvis was a little bit forward and my lumbar spine was kind of hitched and tilted to like a bracing, but mm-hmm. You reminded me to slow down, and in the slowness, that whole pelvis just went into an alignment with the spine.
Right. So that the normal way that you come out of something is very quick. And like you say, you know, you in a, sometimes you have to brace against it and you don't even notice it. And when you emerge from something slowly, you can reorganize how you land. See, a much softer landing, right? So that you begin to, you know, when we replay, right, this process, you know, there's some interesting information that we could harvest about how you normally do things. Right, exactly. Good. Okay, very nice, Chris. Okay, are you okay with that right now?
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, good. Okay, wow, I see. And it continues to resonate. Good. So, yeah. So anyway, that, you know, again, there is so much there that we could debrief if we had the time. And of course, it's one thing to work with somebody who has done so much work like Chris. And, you know, but still, you can begin to see how even with all that work, it's possible by listening to our signals and taking them in and letting them speak to us, we can access a whole other layers of information and possibility. And the very stories that have really helped us develop to a certain point may actually need to be softened and in a way, you know, dissolved for the moment for another layer to enter in and provide us with a kind of a newer story, more resonant with the actual experience of the moment. So great. Okay, I know, you know, I knew we weren't going to have too much time for questions. Is there a second person we can do a very quick session with here?
Heather, do you want to open your microphone?
Yep.
Great. Heather. Okay. Hello. Great. Okay, so we have a few minutes. It's going to be short. But is there something, you know, that you would be willing to just start to talk about that's important, you know, somewhat important to you?
Yes. So the signals that I've been catching recently, I'm at a point in my life where things are changing pretty quickly.
Okay, so stay right there. No, you just did this. Okay. So we want to capture that. You see, stay there. You see how hard it is for somebody to stay there. This is a signal that, you know, I mean, Heather could continue to tell her story, which would have some benefit, but we would lose this signal. This is a signal. It's like a very dramatic shape. whoa, right? And so in the work, we're, that's it. Look what's happened. What's happening for you as you hold this?
I got kind of excited.
Yeah, you see, there is, you know, by holding the gesture, you know, you get more of its information and its excitement and wow. So it's not just that you're going out, it's that, whoa, there's something even forming here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Okay, you see, every story has its own trajectory. It takes us somewhere, but it often takes us to the more or less the same places we always go, because our stories are, you know, our typical stories. And by interrupting the story and slowing it and freezing it, right? Oh, look at that. Look at that circuit. Yeah. Okay. Right. So now if you'd like, let's bring that, you know, that right hand back slowly, really slow. And stop for a second. Yeah, take a look. You see, you even want to look at that hand. What do you see when you look at that hand?
I mean, mainly I see fingers right now in the space between the fingers.
Uh-huh, yeah, but you were called to looking at it, wasn't it? You it drew your attention.
Yes.
So there's something there, along with the fingers and the space. Good, and you just take your time. See, this is how we begin to read signals that we weren't even sure were signals. You see, because when we look at this particular shape, something looks like it's in your face here. There's something there that wants to be seen. As I sit with you and I look at this, I go, wow, looks like she's got something in that right hand that wants to be seen. Does that make sense to you? At the same time.
Yeah.
At the same time, the other hand is kind of supporting the chest, supporting the heart. And so it tells me that there's a process here that, you know, that each hand has got a different function, signaling different things. You know, a hand on the chest like this, I think we all recognize it signals a kind of support to my heart and my chest. And here, something different or new is maybe coming in. Right. And something has to mature and something has to ripen, of course. Good. Okay. So unfortunately, because of the time, I think we're going to just kind of freeze it there. Slow. Now don't let it. Now look at how you're coming out. Interesting. You see? So something in you knows you don't want to just, you know, there's something interesting in this signal, in this shape. And, you know, part of you isn't ready to quite give it up yet. So good. So you're coming out of it in a way that doesn't just dissolve it, but enables you, a little bit like Chris, to come back, resettle, and still retain what you've touched in that signal. And what's happening for you now?
Well, interestingly, I'm holding on to it.
Yes, exactly. Because the signal seems to have a certain importance. And once you notice it, we see it has something for us, we want to open up what's in there.
Yeah, it has a lot of weight, too.
Yeah, it's got a lot of weight, you see. And so if we had allowed that kind of to just go and come, you know, and then go on to other parts of the story, we would have had a story with different dimensions, but we may not have really, the metaphor I use is, you know, if you're on a train, you can get on the fast train, in which case you can get from A to B really fast. And in a way that's nice. but you don't see much of the landscape. You know, you're going to see the landscape zip by. Now, if the landscape has something important in it, we got to take the slow train, because the slow train enables us to look at the landscape with more detail. You know, and sometimes we may want to stop somewhere along that route and really look with high resolution at what is in that landscape at that place. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's how rhythm and signaling happens, right? If we're fast, we're not going to get much information. We're looking for a rhythm. You see, nice. That kind of puts us in touch with a receptiveness where we can begin to read and explore what's in there. So this is kind of a formative inquiry built around signaling processes, gestures, and so forth, and more, but that's a start. Great. Is that okay, Heather?
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for, okay. So I guess we have 2 or 3 minutes. I don't know, do we have time for a question or two? Because, you know, I don't know if there's probably a lot there. There's a lot there compacted. But I think you probably got a feeling for what this, you know, how we begin to really look at the signaling that emerges out of our stories. It can come through gesture, come through posture. It can come through a lot of different signaling channels. And they will have information that's kind of somewhat implicit, unconscious, and yet, you know, that we somehow will skim over normally if we don't slow it down and pay attention, you know, much more in a much more refined way to what's held there. And that's one important step in this kind of self-signaling formative embodiment process. You know, I'm sure it looks like some things that you may have studied and practiced with, but I imagine there's some elements here that might be a bit different and emphasize things differently. So maybe I quickly name, of course, you know, we're going to explore this in the evenings, the 4 evenings that I'm doing for Kate on action orientation. We're going to take this orientation and expand it for 4 evenings. And then, of course, I'm hoping to be able to come to the States for a course in April, which would be 4 days of this. But anyway, so do we have time for a question or two, Kate? Or
I'm happy to do that with you, Jim. And is there someone in the audience with a burning question? If you would open your microphone, I'll bring you up to be with Jim. And I think there was some curiosity about how that process was for Heather. I don't know if you'd be curious enough. We could be asking her what her experience is after. Would that be all right?
Well, yes, I mean, in a way, it's nice for, you know, the experience to kind of settle in.
Okay.
You know, as you start to ask, you know, we're all curious about, well, what happened for you? But of course, it kind of invites her to kind of get cortical and get cognitive and not to allow the echoes of the experience to settle. Because normally, there's even in a few minutes like this, there are echoes, reverberations, information that's useful just to let it settle before we start to move it again. So I understand the curiosity that people may have about, well, what was that like for you? But I would kind of not go there right now, just to really invite Heather to kind of just be with her own experience. Mm-hmm. And when she feels ready, then she could, you know, maybe cognitize it a bit.
Yeah, I have a question, Jim. Hi, first of all.
This is Tara. Hello,
so good to see you. Very well. Very happy to see you. And I just wanted to hear a little bit more of, I know you're going to do 4 evenings, but and you will continue exploring this, but can you give us a little more details of what it will be about, you know, the content of those times? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be, as I said, you know, there's a whole formative vision, and it's built around the body and the person really being an action oriented. We're really action oriented. That you know, we can meditate, we can explore being, but basically the body is built for action from the get-go, right? You can think of pulsation as an innate action, right? So that the body is built on, first of all, the process of pulsation and all the signaling and ordering that is made possible by pulsation. So we start, build on, the tidal vision of things, the deep pulse of things, as a first step into this action orientation of the person and the adult, right? And then from that, we go into kind of involuntary reflex survival activity, a library of action patterns that are built into us biologically and so forth. And then we look at the whole personal formative process, which is also really an action-based process. And you could even see it with Heather and Chris, that there was something important about the actions generated in the story and then using them, working with them rhythmically. And there's a lot more we do with action to bring further layers of information and memory and traumatic history, whatever, into the moment. Yeah. And so the work deals a lot with shape, with form, and with the dialogue between motor and cortical, but in a very particular way, So of course, we all sit in the world of trauma and polyvagal and somatics and there's a big shared domain, but the work I do with Kellerman, there's a uniqueness to how he goes about this, which I found to be adds something very profound, very elegant, and it's different from, it's very rhythmic, and it highlight certain aspects of our process. I think, one of the closest people is Ray, of course. Ray's work, Ray understood this work in a way. He put it into operation in his unique way, great work, And I've taken it a bit slightly different direction where the principles are probably mostly shared. Some of the processes are shared, but I work more on a one-to-one. You can take this into couples work or even group work, but as you can see, it's one-on-one and it's starting with the moment and what is formed and organized in the moment. And then looking at that and then seeing how we reorganize it, but not how we reorganize it from the outside, how that person's internal formative intelligence, when it's given the information, begins to reorganize itself in this blueprint way. I don't know if that, I guess that's so, I think it, it's so resonant with Ray's work. And yet, there are some important elements that I think are very useful. And so it's built on Kellerman. It's built, of course, on things like polarity and cranial and some pre and perinatal, and then other influence as well.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. It's very useful. Yeah. Thanks, Jim.
Great. So I guess I'm willing to stick around an extra couple of minutes beyond the programmed if there's another question or two. Is that okay, Kate?
Yeah, I'm here. I'd like to hear what questions people have about the work.
Okay.
Would someone like to ask a question? Just open your microphone. There you are. Mary.
I was just seeing in the chat that somebody is asking who is Ray that you referred
Ray
to.
Castellino. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're talking about Ray Castellino. You can look him up. He's got the Mary and Tara are carrying on his wonderful work, and there are websites and so forth through that. But yeah, so that's Ray, Ray is, Ray. I don't know. But anyway, let's see, maybe we can go back to, what we've done here just in case. There are questions about the actual material tonight. That's not discount. Ray's work is really epic. Mm-hmm.
Working with signaling and action. Anybody have a question about demonstrations or about formative embodiment and Jim?
Hi, Jim. This is Amma.
Great. Hello, Anna.
Amma.
Amma. Okay.
With an M. Great. Yeah, Amma. Thank you. Thanks for your time now. And I guess I'm just curious about practice, because I've been on another call with you several months ago, and you were like, don't practice just yet, get more. So I'm just curious about, I'm a massage therapist and an SEP, and I love this work and how you move forward with it. And so I'm curious if your course is going to allow time for practice sessions.
You mean I don't know. It's the 2-hour class. There will be some exercises, but I don't know that really it's a format for extensive practice, because you have to start doing breakout rooms and practicing, and it's 4 2-hour segments. So the purposes are different. The purposes, the practice time comes in a longer course, like a 4-day course, or that's where we really, and it's supervised in a different way. Here, I think we're in a way preparing for what could be practice, but there'll be some, like I say, some exercises. There'll be demos like this, only more extended. And so one will see the work, experience the work differently. And I think that's kind of an important foundation for being able to practice, because there's obviously a lot of, relational elements that we need to build our skills out of. And, there's a lot of skill building that requires more time, obviously. So I guess, I don't know, did I answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, to a degree, yeah. I mean, it sounds like to a degree we'll be able to get the beginning stages of what practice would be.
It's introductory, but it's starting to build, some foundation material, which I think is very useful, practical, and can be applied in certain ways. But obviously, if you have an SE background, you can take things up differently from somebody who doesn't have that particular background. But therapeutic therapists can obviously take things and build them in, but that's different from building in the full view of it. Takes a while to get, just like any therapy has a vision, a set of principles, an overview that you really need to have in order to use the method, the technique and the methods,
because watching you work, it seems so easy to catch, like you catch those moments of the gesture so quickly, and I'm like, oh right, because I get kind of caught in that story listening to the story.
That's one of the
The practice is needed, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of a formative orientation, so I build a formative orientation where obviously I'm listening to the story, I'm listening to the emotional resonances, but the formativeness of it, which is seen to a great extent in the gesture, but there's more to it than that. It's really about, it goes back, like I said, to the embryological process of forming intelligence that has intentions for us throughout the life cycle. And that formative intelligence then can be layered upon in personal ways, So it's really about building a formative intelligence, a formative thinking, and a formative orientation. And that's where the shift happens, It's different, every therapy has the way of thinking that it generates. Yeah. So, you know, so this also generates a certain way of thinking, which I think can blend with other ways of thinking, but also some ways of thinking may really literally have to kind of reorganize a bit to open up the formativeness.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Anna. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, if there may be a final question or two here.
A final question. Anyone?
Tim, how you doing, guy?
Hello, Jim. Nice to see you. And yeah, glad to see you're getting your show on the road.
Hey, absolutely. You know, the greatest show on earth. No, great. Go ahead.
So yeah, I was kind of just asking about. I mean, my sense was there were kind of energetic shifts taking place when you were working with the demos, and I just wondered to what extent, you know, that's kind of how you're reading the room in a way, or
Well, I'm using everything that I ever learned, right, for better or for worse, you know. And so, of course, my background started with polarity therapy in the therapy world. And so Dr. Stone, of course, you know, was a very built very much on yoga principles and an energetic anatomy, you know, wireless anatomy, and, you know, built around the five elements, a model of frequent five various frequencies. So we really, you know, we really formed ourselves to appreciate that kind of those subtle frequencies, which everybody is capable of picking up, but we've forgotten, and we need to train them again to a great extent. And it's, you know, these are, yeah. So that was an important part for me, the polarity principle, everything that kind of suggests, and the kind of the resonant fields that are built. And so that is part of my perceptual toolkit. And of course, you know, cranial biodynamics with its tidal experience and its midlines and all of that is also part of it. But of course, you don't have to take those trainings to learn certain aspects of what we're doing, you know, but it's helpful. And then, but probably the biggest piece is the Kellerman piece, which is built on his formative psychology, which also has pulsatory implications and quantum implications. The Kellerman vision is much bigger than most people realize. A lot of people have read some Kellerman, you know, they've been exposed one way or another to Kellerman, but if you haven't really been with him over time and seen him work and listened to him and so forth, a lot of people don't appreciate the brilliance that he brought to really the whole somatic world. Some people do, of course, but it's not as widely appreciated. He was, I think, one of the truly brilliant, you know, thinkers in the world of somatics and somatic psychology. And it includes all of that. He had he began with Reichian, you know, neo-Reichian work and bioenergetics. So he had his own kind of developmental process, which included a lot of that. So yes. That's a long story, but yes, energetics, relational.
It works online as much as it does in the room. Is it different?
Yeah, it does. That's you know, it can work online, as you can see. You know, it's not quite, the resolution is not quite as high as when you're in person, but it's still there. Yeah, you know, you can still see TV at 720 rather than 2,400 pixels. You know, so yeah, it works. It works. Great. Thanks, Tim. Okay. So I don't know. What do you think, Kate? Shall we go one more?
Well, I'm happy to take more questions. It's up to the audience here. If the audience wants to ask more.
Sure.
So if you just want to open your microphone, and I'm happy to bring you up on. Let's see, who do we have here? Anybody?
So, well, I guess not, if there isn't, I mean, I, you know, there's a whole, we haven't talked so much about the embodiment part, but just a word or two, right? That there is really a whole, Kellerman has what's called a whole bodying practice. It's a beautiful practice. It's not, you know, the slowing down and the freezing frames are a piece of it, but there's a much more to it. And it's a bodying practice, which literally is that. It's kind of a way to take experience and embody it, bring it into a fuller presence in ourselves. Embodiment, of course, is another term that's really caught on lately and for good reasons. And the formative psychology and the formative embodiment have a particular take on that. And the challenge of embodiment is also a developmental challenge. I mean, for an adolescent to embody what's happening to him or her is different from what a young adult is needing to embody, and is different from somebody who's moving into the aging or mature phases of life. They're going to have to embody a whole different set of experiences and give them form, because it's such a different time. You know, the physical, you know, the musculature, the connective tissue, the neural responsiveness are all different. And so they need to embody differently. And so this idea of embodiment is very much, an age-based process. And it's an ongoing process. And it's not, you know, it's grounding, but it's not just grounding. And it's feeling sensation and feeling, but it's not just that either. It's felt sense, but it's got a whole other dimension around, how we continually grow our embodiment to meet the moment that we are living. And it's a very useful vision of it, a very, I think, optimistic view of forming ourselves until the last moments, right? I think maybe we're coming to a conclusion. I don't know. I'd love to talk, as you can tell, but maybe we're reaching that moment.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for coming. Please do consider joining us. We'll be having four Wednesdays, starting in 2 weeks, so January, or actually less than that now, February the 16th, we'll have 4 2-hour classes then, and then we'll have 4 days in April, late April. And I'll be sending out the links for all of that, if you all are interested, when I send out the link of the recording today. And thank you for coming, and thank you, Jim File, for coming and giving us your gift of what you've been forming and what you've brought together. So Thank you, everyone.
Kate. Everyone, good, nice seeing you.
All right. See you next time.
Great. You want to stand for a moment, Kate, or are you?
Yes. Yeah. Why don't we stay? We'll see you all.
Okay. Bye, everybody.